we are Kufayin Tes. So if you go to Sif Gimel in the Shulchan Aruch itself, the last time we had the following idea. We said the last line in the Mechaber before you get to the Ramah, the Mechaber commented, V'chein ha'omer shachlu tarnagol shakara ka'orei v'tarnagol zu shakara ka'tarnagol tarnagol azu shakara ka'tarnagol asin. If we say shech this chicken as it sounds like a raven, or shech this chicken as it sounds like a rooster, so that's going to be prohibited. So why is that prohibited? So the Ramah then comments, V'yish omrim im eino omer hatam, because remember the Ramah in the Dark Emotion says that, or I think it was from the Maharil, that it was the minhag that people did use to shech these types of chickens. So he says, yeah, V'yish omrim eino omer hatam lama mitzvah lishcho to tarnagol. So if you don't say the reason why you're doing it, el omer stav shech the tarnagol. So you just say, just shech this tarnagol. Mutter l'shach, you're allowed to do it. Kashakara k'tarnagol v'chein hu hamilag, as it's called, the this tarnagolus, this chicken that sounds like a rooster, and that is the minhag. So the minhag is that we shach these animals. We just don't say why we're doing it. We pointed out last week that the Gra has a different gear than the Gemara, and that's why he says it's mutter. So that ends up then leaving the Gra in a machlokas with the Ramah. The Ramah says that the reason you're allowed to do things that seem that are otherwise superstitious, as long as you don't label it as superstition, you just go ahead and do it. While the Gra might disagree with that. He might say the reason why we're making with regards to the chicken is a local reason to that Gemara. That Gemara itself has a Girsa issue, and we may pass it like the other Girsa. But in general, we would not be permitted to do such a thing. So that seems to be this machlokas. Now there is a Pischi Chuvi here in Siftal that brings up the issue of the Tzavas of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. We started talking about this last week. The Tzava is like the last will and testament of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. If you want, I don't know where to find it in Hebrew, but I did find it in English. Rabbi Yair Hoffman translated the whole thing. He added and added in a few of his own comments. So he has all 78 here. He said there, he writes in, the reason he's writing about this is because someone just published a new edition. Now the problem is, as you pointed out last week, Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid was born in 1140, died in 1217, and the copy of what is allegedly his Tzavos wasn't found for another couple hundred years afterwards. So the assumption is that it came from him. He was a pretty big person. He was the author of the Sefer Chassidim, that we know, and he's also the father of the Chachmei Ashkenazi, and not literally the father, the Rebbe of the beginning of Chachmei Ashkenaz, as the Jewish world shifted from Germany to France. So he was the one who founded the yeshivas in France, even though his main talmidim are all German people. I'm not sure where people were exactly at that time. So he
Rabbeinu Tam precedes him.
Rabbeinu Tam precedes him.
As Rashi precedes.
That is true. Rashi precedes him. Yeah, but they're not considered Chachmei Ashkenaz. Maram, Maril, that Chevra are different. Now, how is that?
Does Ashkenaz mean Germany?
Yeah, Ashkenaz usually means France. That's usually what it means. But the Tosfos were there. Okay, I gotta work that out. So there are among the things on this list are some things that are somewhat difficult. Some of them are things that work. Some of them are things that perhaps even go against the Gemara. So things that almost go against the Gemara, it seems to. So that will hold off. That's till the middle of the Yehud. The problem is a lot of these things just are. They seem to be out of nowhere. Like why? One of the things is for instance, they said not to name any children Yehuda or Shmuel. So the suggestion is that, oh, that was talking about his descendants. That was only referring to. So it's not necessarily him himself. But there are other ones that are here. So the idea of not marrying somebody who has the same name as your in-law. So that would be that's from Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. And that's somewhat prominent. People know about that. The idea, there's an idea of not shaving Rosh Chodesh. That comes from Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. That has made into Mishnah Berurah. That's part of our Mesorah. Then there's other ideas of two brothers not marrying two sisters.
Not shaving on Rosh Chodesh?
Not shaving or getting haircuts on Rosh Chodesh, yeah.
Hmm.
You got a problem with that? So Mishnah Berurah mentions
it. I just thought there was this one time like this in...
Yes.
During
Sfira, right.
Sphira,
so during
Rosh Chodesh turns out on Sunday.
Right, when Rosh Chodesh falls out on Friday, so you're allowed to combine the Lechavut Shabbos / Rosh Chodesh in order to do it. So that's when everyone thinks about, oh, wait a second, Savar Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, you're not allowed to get haircut on Rosh Chodesh. So he, I think, only prohibits one of the days. I think only Rosh, maybe the second day and not the first day. So it's only one of those scenarios. That's plus the Mishnah, I think, there doesn't mention Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. In Hilchos Rosh Chodesh, he does. So you have a stira of Mishnah Berurah then, so you have to work it out. But that's right. That's the one time of year for a lot of people that they think about this Rabbi Yehuda Chassid. There,
Tishrei,
Rosh Chodesh Tishrei. Very few people shave Rosh Chodesh Tishrei. There's the idea of not marrying one's niece, although the Torah explicitly talks about that. That's okay. There's an idea of, and this is actually what we're going to, what this Pesachei Teshuvah is talking about, that a person shouldn't build a house on land that never had a building on it. And the second thing is not to build a, not to build a stone house to live in. So those two things are included in the Tzavas of Rabbi Yehuda Chassid as things that are prohibited. Why? So the implication is, although again, you don't know exactly what came from Rabbi Yehuda Chassid and what didn't, but it is the Chassam Sofer, at least he quotes from Chassam Sofer that he mentions, that yeah, that idea is because we don't want you to get too settled in Chutzlar, so it's inappropriate to build a stone house or to build a house. I mean, go find a place to live that's already built, but you shouldn't go ahead and build your own house. So that is the subject, that line in that's which is number 17 and number 18, number 16 and number 17 is the subject of this Pesachei Teshuvah. So if we go to this Pesachei Teshuvah, he writes in Dalet El Omer Stam. So what is it? Ayin Be'er Hetev, Ayin B'Tshuvah Tzachsam Sofer, Simen Kuflam Ches, Odos Mashakasav B'Be'er Hetev. Okay, B'Shem Tzavas Rabbi Yehuda Chassid, Sheyesh Sakana Livona. Levona Beis Avanim, that there is a sakana in building a house of stone. As well as a prohibition, or a sakana, it sounds like, of building in a place where there was never a house there before.
Is that the same reason as the stone house, or is that a different reason?
Well, it's two things on the list, but there might be the same reasoning. We don't want you to build permanent houses in Chutz La'aretz. Oh, you're saying...
You're saying it's a different reason, it could be because of change.
Oh, so, well, the danger is because Rabbi Yehuda Chassid one second. So, the Chassam Sofer is the one who says that the problem, that we don't want you to build a house of stone, that's the Eretz Yisrael thing. Now, the idea of not building a house on land that never had a building on it, so that is a sakana. That he doesn't give the reason for, and perhaps that is a sakana. What is a sakana? So we don't know what's going to be, and that's what he says. If Amri Inshe, so this is what people say. How do you, if you build a house from scratch where there never was a house before, what do you do? So Lahaniach Ba'abai is Tarnagel Zachar V'Nekeva Uleshochtam Sham Ileka Vazem Yishim Darki Amori. So what do they suggest to do? So bring in a chicken and a rooster and let them hang out in the house for a little while, and then you go and shecht them there, and that will solve all the problems of the sakana. Right?
So there's no house there. The sakana was there was no house was there.
No. If you then build a house, there's a sakana about that house. So before anybody moves in, let a chicken and rooster hang out there for a while, and then you'll go and shecht them, and then that will solve the problem of the sakana. So why? So if he wants to know, is that mutter to do, or should we be concerned of Darkei Amori? That sounds kind of Darkei Amori like. So what's going on here? So he says, well, the chas of the time of the honey inshi shehem dimu deim. The reason their svara was yemenuchu sham zman mazuk tarnagolim hanikrim gever. If you leave them this pair there for a while, so tarnagolim, chickens, are also referred to as gever, right? In Brachas Hashachar, right?
No,
it's not there. Right. But other places referred to as gever. So you say, so havalei hagvarim ha'ilu hadyurim harishonim shebavayis. So what are we saying? So instead of having people move in and be the first residents of this house, you put the chickens in there for a while, let them be the first residents of the house. And then uveshchitasam hainu misasam kvar mesu. And that way, when you shech them, so their death already happened, hadyurim harishon, the first people who lived already died, shebavayis vehema. Let pikuach nefesh.
Oh, it could be.
Find the behema pikuach nefesh, and therefore it's like a print must be pikuach nefesh. Okay. Ba'al vayis dugmas hakaparos shenogim, which is similar to the idea of the kaparos, which we have the minhag to do. I mean, we have the minhag of doing kaparos. I think we actually mentioned that was in Chukas. I think we mentioned that already. So we have the idea of, so this is similar to kaparos. Just you do kaparos when you have a new year. So too, you should do kaparos when you have a new house by letting some animals hang out in there for a while, and then you go ahead and shech them, and that should solve the problem. So the Sam Sofer seems to permit it, but says, "Aval tovi yoseh shelo lachash l'dvar me'elu." It's better not to really think about these things. V'chiyosi behem shelo husku b'shas uposkim v'lo Rabbi Yehuda chasid chasim aleihem, because they're not mentioned in shas and poskim, and Rabbi Yehuda chasid didn't actually sign on them. Okay, he continues on in this. I'm not sure where this star is coming from. There's a little star there. I don't know where that goes to. But he says, "V'ulai v'vona bayis avanim shelo l'tzarech l'harchiv lo mishkanos b'chutz la'aretz." But if you build these houses and it's not the shelo l'tzarech, a house of stones shelo l'tzarech l'harchiv lo mishkanos, but to set up the neighborhoods in chutz la'aretz, ulis yashiv min ha'gula, and therefore you forget about the gula. V'hu adin hamarchiv. This must be earlier on in the. I'm not sure where this star is. Okay, but ve'enu mishum hari. One second. So that building is like a sakana. Ve'enu mitzvah lahagin. Aval anu b'avonos harabim tzrichim ruben. We have needs. We have to build houses. L'daiti ika mitzvah lahamsi makom dira le'se. Is that what you have here? Pizura. That it seems like from the Yehuda Chassid thing that there's an idea not to build in Chutz La'aretz, but what can we do? We have to build right here, and we're stuck in Chutz La'aretz still, and we need houses and we need yeshivas, so therefore it is considered now a mitzvah to go ahead and build in these things. Rabbi Reifen this year, from what I recall, mentioned that this might only, the gezira might only be on stone. Is brick stone? Brick might not necessarily be the same as stone. It's cement stone, so it's not necessarily stone. So maybe we have a way around that, bizman hazeh. But there is these stringencies on these issues that are mentioned in the Rebbe Yehuda Chassid. So, take a look at the sheet that I prepared over there. There's the front of the page that looks kind of awkward. Is the Noda Yehuda? That's kind of the for the Litvish world. That is the main discussion. The main tshuva on. Yes, main shuva on the topic. So I put it right. It's the top of the page is here, and the bottom of the page is here. Right. So it's, so you're starting from the top. See where it says tshuva l'chavod ahuvi talmida yidide harav to Rabbeinu David. Right. So that is. So he's writing a tshuva to his talmud, someone named David. I don't think we know who he is. But halayl hazeh higiyani michtavecha asher ata shol b'davar hashidach habedubar legisasecha. That you wrote to me asking me about the shidduch, that speaking about your brother-in-law, I think, right? Im ben Torah, no, your brother-in-law, Im ben Torah, right? V'yichsen rak shebishas cholav hashinu yishem shelo hu k'shem avi habesula.
Oh, maybe
it's a sister-in-law. Well, no. It is a, he's, that's talking about a boy. Gisasecha is a boy.
Gisasecha would be a boy. Gisasecha would be a boy.
Yes, but it's
no.
Ben Torah.
Yeah, so with the man that she's marrying from.
No. That's talking about her, because that's talking about the man. Because if he's marrying his name is the same as the Avi HaBasula, the father of the Basula. I'm not sure if it's marrying his sister or marrying someone else that he's related to. But the concern is that this boy, when he was this Chassan, not David. David is the guy asking the question. But this Chassan, who's a Ben Torah, when he was younger, he got sick, and apparently they added on a name. And lo and behold, that name is the same as his potential father-in-law, which is a violation. In theory, it would be a violation of one of the kanos, or one of the things on the list of the tzavos of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. So, does one have to be nervous about this? So the Noda Yehuda responds by saying, "Ahuvi Talmidai Lulei Havascha in Darki LaHashiv Binyan Keilu." Wasn't for the fact that I love you very much, I don't answer these kinds of questions. Shein Lahem Shorish B'Talmud V'Poskim. Because there's no root for it in Talmud and Poskim. We just can't. It's just like out there. But because I love you so much, it's taking me outside my comfort zone, and I'll write you a tshuva on the topic, even though I'm not so comfortable about it. So it says, "Datam mitei hachaviviyu dvarim halalu chakukim aluach libecha lizikarum klap." That you should know that these things are engraved on the heart. and remembered. Hagadol she'ein l'chol chachamim she'achar ha'talmud rishus lomer davar neged ha'talmud. Now this you should know is that no talmud chacham has a right to say things or to add things that go against the Gemara. Va'omer davar lister kotzel yud medivrei ha'talmud. If you say anything that violates even the little leg of the yud in the Gemara, so lo yichashev b'chlal chachmei Yisrael. So he's not including chachmei Yisrael. So you think that he's about to throw the whole Rabbi Yehuda Chassid thing out. But Amnam, however, kishanu motzim echam lichachmei Yisrael hamuksak b'tor v'yira belisaf eik shakasa b'sefer davar asosu devri atalmud. But when we find somebody who's known to be a Talmud Chacham and he says something that seems to go against the Gemara, chayvim anu l'mishkone nafshin l'taritz varo. So then we have to work very hard in order to try to figure out how does it work. What does he have to say with regards to connected to the Gemara? How do you fit that in with the Gemara? Shulodav arach l'sha olamishbacha pratis v'divrei Talmud heim ala klal. It's not just something that was said to one individual family, but rather the Talmud is something that fits everybody. So we find that Rabbi Yehuda Chassid wrote in his tzava, dvarim shekimat asr lanu l'shomam, things that seem like it should be asr for us to listen to. Ki omer shelo yisabas achosa, because he said that you shouldn't marry the daughter of your sister. I mean, you shouldn't marry your niece. But the Gemara says that's a good idea. Who Omer? He says Shelo Yisa Av Uveno Shtei Achayos, that a father and a son should marry two sisters. But yet we see in the Gemara of Papa Uveno Nasa Shtei Banos Shel Abasura, that Rav Papa and his son married two sisters, the daughters of Abasura. Who Omer? He says Shelo Yisu Beis Achim Shtei Achayos, that two brothers shouldn't marry two sisters. But the Gemara says Shmonim Zug Achim Kohanim Nisu Shmonim Zug Achayos Kohanos. That the Gemara has a case, I'm not sure where this is, of eight brothers marrying eight sisters.
So it sounds like a movie. There is such a movie.
There is such a movie.
Something. It's like a Western. Seven brides for seven brothers or something like that.
Some case I just was reading where the post of Hardly comes from the Talmud where there were like 12 women married, 12 brothers, and all the brothers died except one. They wanted them to Yibam for all the brothers. And the guy said, I can't afford to support all these women. So
they were all sisters?
I think so.
Well,
so
they can't.
Keith to Rabbi Yehuda Nassi.
That doesn't
matter. I couldn't be sisters.
Alright, Bechiotiv is a mitzvahi. The Imaya Chasin mitzvah l'tzavazu l'chol Yisrael harehu sosu devre Talmud. So if he was actually saying this, that this should be to all of Yisrael, so it's going against the Gemara. So we shouldn't be allowed to accept anything that he has to say. Aval, but ha'em. So you think, like, okay, great, just. It's out. We're done. Aval ha'emes yored darko ki achasel lezaro achrav tiva le. I can't read what those words are. The dore doros, I guess, that he commanded it for generations to come. Ki rab ruach hakodesh lezaro lo yatzliach bezivugim keila. But maybe he did write it for generations to come, meaning his descendants, because he saw that his descendants might not have good matches in this way. What was it? In associate divrei talmud. Then there he's not violating the gemara. Shu halakha, which is for everybody. Divrei achasel ki ala prat. He says that's number one. So number one, he's instructing his Talmud. Yes, it's true that we have this Sivav Rabbi Yehuda Chassid, but it's very possible it's only for individuals, not for the klal. Va'od amina shevalav hachi b'she'ela zu sheshila tani. With regards to the question that you asked me, ain kan chashashcha. Don't have to worry at all. Va'fiul lizaru shel achassid, even for his descendants. Va'amina trei tami lochi achshe achassid davar diber rak al ikker shem ha'etzem hanitein b'sha. Leda. I mean, he was only talking about the main name that was given at birth, Osha Samila, at the bris. But he wasn't talking about a name that was changed on later, that was changed later on. And he gives two reasons. Really, he says, first of all, that's because of the idea of the zugos that are made, so that has to be, you know, from birth. And then he goes on and it's says
okay.
Also,
it's okay for this guy because he got it later.
Right. And he also goes on and says, that wouldn't be right. He says, the six lines before the end, where it says, he says, that wouldn't be right, that a guy changes his name in order to get better, now comes back to haunt him later on. And he says, that can't be. We're only going to go with the old name, not the new name. And then he goes on and talks about how it's important to marry to Minyan Chachamim, and therefore I give you a bracha that this marriage should go through. So Nozi Yehuda, even though he seems to kind of accept it, meaning he goes, it sounds like if it wasn't the name that was added on later on, so he wouldn't be so quick to just say, it's all right, go ahead and get married together. There is also on the back, yeah.
Well, he sort of says. But it's descendants of regular
person. Well, it'd be right, but then he's concerned that maybe you're...
Yeah, you know you're not.
Right.
This falls into magic because it's some kind of a bad omen.
Why does it fall into our page of Shulchan Aruch?
Yeah.
So, to my knowledge, this is like the discussion where it comes up. So even though it comes because of the issue with the killing the chicken, so that falls into the superstitious practice. Uh-huh. So once we're on the topic of Yehuda HaChassid, I figured it was just... cover a few of the other issues of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. They're pretty prominent. These things come up regularly. I mean, people raise this issue. First of all, it comes up very often because, especially with the names is like a very prominent one. And then there's some other ones that come up, which people, you'll hear about. Really, I never heard about that, but it's on the list. And how do we deal with it? So there is a tshuva, and this is very early on. This is Chelek Aleph Simon Dalet of Ibn Ezer in Igros Moshe, but there's no date on it. So I don't know if it's the one after it is dated Tafshin Chaf Aleph, and the one before it is Tafshin Yud Beis. So although these aren't in chronological order, but still that era, so pretty early on. So here he has a Rebbe Echad Shirotzo Lisa Isha Sheshma Kashen Ima. He wants to marry a woman whose mother is this, who has the same name as his own mother.
So where are we on this page?
Simon Dalet.
Dalet.
Yeah, so the bottom right.
Okay.
So he also makes this point. Somebody who has this issue of marrying somebody with the same name as his mother, it's hard to give a straight answer on this. Why? And this is anybody who says anything on this, they're going based on their own svara, ba'alma, below makor. I'm not sure what that stands for, Rod Divrehim. And you'll have to see what they say. Now, I have an article here that I Din Online, one of the online things, halachically speaking, where he has 8 pages on Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, and as you can see on the bottom, very well footnoted. I mean, a lot of things people say on these things, but Rav Moshe is saying, yeah, people have their thoughts, but their thoughts, it's very hard to give a raya, to give proofs one way or another, because it's hard to know where the starting point is in discussion of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. So, he goes on the middle paragraph to talk about, maybe you could change your name. Is it maybe worthwhile to change one's name? And he says that might not help because the issue is not the Hebrew names, the issue really is the English names. So then you could go ahead, fine, so we'll change the English name. That the guy will start calling the girl some other name. So Moshe then said, yeah, but that's a joke too, because what guy is going to want to call his wife a different name than is the one that he met her all along also? I said, that's really the main issue. So if you go to the last paragraph, Moshe has what is a pretty big chiddush, I think. It says, uvechlal, Michevan she'achasen ba'atzma va'kala ba'atzma. He says, who's the one raising this issue? Right? Are the chasen kala bothered by this? They're not bothered by this. Who's the one that's bothered by this? The mom! The mom's the one who's upset. So he says, if a chasen and the kala themselves don't have a problem, ein makpidim, ein oklum. You don't have to worry about it. The v'chai gavna amrin, amanda lo kapid lo kaptina. The one who's not, plus this is the kinds of things that would say, if you're not makpid, we're not going to be makpid on you. The kfeidos ha'im, ein shayach lakan. And just because the mother's upset about it, doesn't mean that that's connected here. Ki echashashu lo laha. The concern is not for the mother, it's for the chasen and the kala. And if they don't worry about it, they're not worried about it, so the mother shouldn't be worried about it either. So that's the Shita Rav Moshe that gets quoted a lot, which is obviously a big kula, meaning that these questions are going to come up once the chasen and kala are in love with each other, want to get married, and the mother and the parents are raising issues. Oh, wait a second, I don't know. But these issues also come. You know, the more you move into the world of arranged marriages and things like that, so this becomes a really big deal. So, I mean, Reisman told the story that he said Rebelsky once inquired about his cousin. He wanted one of his relatives. He wanted, I think, for his daughter, I think. I think he was asking about his daughter to marry some this other guy. I think was Rabbi Reisman was implying was his cousin. So he asked Rabbi Reisman, so what, like, what, you know, what does he go, he said, the only problem is his name is Yisrael, and my name is Yisrael. So Rabbi Reisman said, no, but it's okay, because his friends all call him Srili. Everybody knows him as Srili. So Ravelsky said, yeah, that's great, except all my friends from when I was younger also called me Srili. And he called off the shidduch. Now, that might have been before they started going out. You know, there's different levels in when we're going to employ this, we're not going to employ this. You know, what's Shasat Chak, what's not Shasat Chak. But it's like, it's an issue. It's kind of like one of these hazy halachic issues that are out there that one has to deal with. Just to comment on a couple of the other issues. One of the big issues we mentioned last week is the idea of closing windows and doors. That Rabbi Yehuda Chassid says you shouldn't cover up windows. So if you had a window there ever, to cover it up is a problem, unless you put a hole there. The hole means to, like, put a hole through the wall. That seems to be, and there are people that are makbid on this. Bob, next time you have a list of shaylas for Shmuel, I wouldn't mind asking him about that. I appreciate it. Another one that he talks about, not removing ovens. So ovens, there are those that are very makbid on not moving ovens at all.
Very clean for Pesach.
Right. Well, not removing it from the house. But
what if you need to? Yeah. What if you need to clean?
No, it's not from the house. But he said, Reza said that the real din is only if it's built into the wall, not to remove a built-in wall. And he commented. I mentioned this last week. He commented that his parents, who apparently are Reisman Bakery, right? So his parents bought their bakery. There was an old stone oven, and they just left it there. They didn't take it. They asked the Shaila, and that was the answer. You shouldn't go in and take it out. Another one of the famous one is, right, this issue with the names. And then another issue that they're not cutting hair in Rosh Chodesh. And I feel like there's one that I'm leaving out that I wanted to mention. But that is the that's the sugi of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. Wow. Take it or leave it. So one to cover a little bit more. The issue of go to Siv Dalid. So this is the part that which one should we start the sugya? Should we do like the small point of the sugya times 26? All right, let's go to the Beis Yosef. So the Beis Yosef says, go to Kufayin Tes Dalid. So Kufayin Tes Dalid, this is the real issue, the real sugya of superstitions. Looking at signs, looking at things, and figuring out how one is going to act based on those signs. So in the Beis Yosef, in Kuf Ayin Tes Dalid, so he makes a comment of the Perek Gid Hanasha. I mean, the Torah also has this, but it's really quoting from Gemara and Gid Hanasha. Kol Nichesh She'enu Keli Ezer Eved Avram V'Chiyonasan Ben Shaul. If you have Nichesh, which is not like Eliezer and Yonasan, Eino Nichesh. That's not Nichesh. That's the words of the Gemara. So that's a little bit of a double negative over there. If it's not like them, it's not Nichesh. What does that imply? If you flip all the negatives around, that Eliezer and Yonasan both did Nichesh, right? That's what it sounds like from that Gemara. Now, the one of those two cases, Eliezer is next week's Parsha. That's when Eliezer goes and says, if somebody comes and does these things for me, so that's going to be the wife for Yitzchak. And the case in Shmuel is that Yonasan was about to fight on behalf of Shaul, and he was very undermanned. It was just him and his guy, right? Just him and his assistant, and they were about to take on an entire army, and they weren't sure whether they were supposed to be doing this or not. So Yonasan said, "We'll do the following test. If we're going to say we're going to reveal ourselves, and if they say, oh, we're coming to get you, so then we're going to run away. But if they say, come to get us, so then we'll go to them, and that shows that Hashem has put us in their hands, and we're going to go and knock all of them out." So those are the two cases of Nichesh Natar, where they seem to be picking a sign and following based off of it. So the Gemara seems to imply that that's a problem. But we're not going to say that Eliezer and Yonasan are doing the wrong thing. So Rashi explains, Kol nichi she'eno somich alav mamish keliezer eved avram she'im tishkini adaber ma v'im lav lo adaber ba. that Rashi explains any nichesh which we're not going to be totally somich on, like Eliezer was. I worked this out before. Kol nichesh eino somich alav. Oh, that we're not being somich, totally somich on like Eliezer, meaning that Eliezer, at the end of the day, wasn't really somich on it. He was really using it as a simon. But Eliezer, it seems from the story, was really being somich on it, so then that would be considered nichesh. So the problem of nichesh is to take a sign and to be totally reliant on that sign. But if you're using that sign as just a simon that things are going well, so then that's okay. And the claim is that that's what Eliezer was doing.
It was a simon that you had.
Right, that Eliezer was really only using it as a simon. But the language sounds like it was superstitious. And if you were really doing it, what it sounds like Eliezer was doing, so then that would be a problem of nechesh. So the Rambam then says, that we're talking about the prohibition of nechesh. Aval harayvid hisigal Rambam. The Ravid argues and says, "V'chasav davarzeh mutter hu." They says that this is mutter. V'had the kamar kol nichesh enu kileazer ever Avram enu nichesh lo leinyan iser veheter el lomarsh enu roy lismuchalav. I mean, what he was saying is that really the opposite of what the Gemara, of the way the Rambam understands it. He said that if it's not like what Eliezer did, so then you shouldn't bother relying on it. Right, so there seems to be a machlokas Rambam and Ravid how to understand this story. How it comes out is a little difficult. How do you figure out how it comes out? So the Ravid is saying that that if it's not a solid thing, you shouldn't bother relying on it. The Ravid is taking it as that what Eliezer did is okay, and we're not going to, but if it's not as good as that, we're not going to bother relying on it. While the Rambam is saying, no, that this is talking about an Isser Veheter thing, and if you sound like you're doing what Eliezer, if you're doing what it sounds like Eliezer was doing, so then you're going to violate the din. The Bach, I'm not going to bother finding for it, but deep into this Bach over here, on the other side of the page, the Bach says that the reason Eliezer was allowed, that Eliezer really was in violation of Nichish, and that Yehonasan really was in violation of Nichish, and the only reason it was mutter for them is because they had Ruach HaKodesh, that they should go ahead and do that. But therefore you can't really learn from that, meaning the Gemara is, you take the Gemara literally. If it's like what Eliezer is doing, you have violated Nichish. What did Eliezer do? Well, he's the exception to the rule. But really it is Jewish. What?
Eliezer wasn't Jewish.
And he wasn't Jewish. Yehonasan was, though.
Yes.
Yeah. The Darkei Moshe points out that the same way the Ravid reads it is the way that the Radak reads it. The Radak on that Chumash, on that Pasuk of Chumash, in Perek Yudalet, Pasuk Tes, in Shmuel, says the same thing, that these kinds of things where you have established something for the future and you're going to, I mean, the problem according to the Radak is when you look at something in the past and then base that on a sign. But if you establish something for the future, if this happens, then I will follow it. So the Radak is saying that that is what becomes permissible. Okay, so if we take a look at, take a flip back to the Shulchan Aruch.
I think I lost the last sentence. Establishing for the future.
The Radak's distinction is that both what Eliezer and Yonasan did was to say, if such a thing happens, then we're going to follow it. So that's different than, the piece of bread just fell on the floor. Now I'm going to change my mind. Because it's something for the future, that's why it was something worthwhile believing in. That seems to be the way the Radak is.
They were doing it for the future.
Yeah. Yeah, so...
That's really a thin line.
Yes, it is.
If a black cat crosses like that, then I'm not going to go. Is that any better than saying a black cat crosses my path?
Well, they're going for a specific... Okay,
it's not quite the same as that.
Yeah, so that Gemara and Chulin then goes on to quote...
The whole thing about even suspecting that it was Nichlish, I mean, she was demonstrating certain qualities. I mean, why does it even enter the realm of Nichlish?
Question on the Gemara,
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Yonah said they could have reflected something about the battle plan and their confidence about battle. I mean, the same
thing. Right, no, that is what happened, which is what I think that's really what the Rambam is saying. I mean, that's what it means that it's a siman. I mean, it was being taken as a siman. That's what the Rambam is trying to say. That if they do this, and that's a sign that, what? That she's a Baal's Chesed, and that these army people are really afraid of us. Mm-hmm. That's what the Rambam, I think that is what the Shita of Rambam is. So, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't actually quote that. I'm not sure why not. That's kind of interesting that he doesn't actually quote that Gemara itself. He quotes the continuation of the Gemara, where the Gemara says, "Beis tinok v'isha, afal pi she'ein a bayit, mean bayis, a house, a tinok, a baby, and an isha, afal pi she'ein nichlish yeish simen." Even though there is no superstition, there is a simen in the things that happen afterwards. And what the Gemara says that's referring to is if bad things happen after you buy this house, or bad things happen after you have this baby, or after you get married, so then that's a problem. That means it's a simen ra. Now, Reisman quoted a letter from the Chazon Ish that somebody, I think the Chazon Ish, that somebody wrote him a letter saying, you know, after I got married, these five or six terrible things happened. So what should I do about it? So the Chazon Ish said, oh, don't worry about it. The world doesn't have bad things in life. So Reisman said, yeah, but the Shulchan Aruch says that. I mean, it's very nice you made him feel better, but I don't know what you do with this din. Shulchan Aruch seems to say that after these three things, if you have experienced bad luck, there's some kind of concern that you're supposed to have. Unless the Chazon Ish was kind of just saying that we can't deal with these kinds of things anymore today, but such an idea exists. It is quoted in Shulchan Aruch that if you have very bad luck after you buy a house, so you have to be concerned about the house that you just moved into.
The Shulchan Aruch doesn't really tell you what this is all about.
I know.
Well, the Tinoch thing seems to have to do with
it. The Gemara itself lists those off. Bias, Tinoch, Isha, the Gemara.
What does it mean?
That after that.
You have to know the
Gemara to know
what
this means.
Look, for example, the
Tinoch
thing they seem to be interpreting.
Right, so okay, so take a look. I mean, the Shach quotes from Rashi. The Shach explains, Pirish Rashi, Bona Bayis Ben, Onolad Lo Ben, if you build a house, or you have a child, or Nasi Yish, or you marry a woman, Ava Vishay Nechush, Asur Lenachish, even though it's not considered superstitious, not allowed to be superstition, Velis Mochala Nechush, Yish Simonim, I'm not sure what the Samach Yud stands for, but there are siman ba'al mahavi, right? There are signs. The imat sliach b'schor, if you're successful in your business, rishona, achar shabana bayis, after you build a house, oshna levetinok, oshna se'isha, or you have a baby, or you get married, siman hu shaholich matzliach. That's a siman that things will be good. V'im lav, al yargil yoser midai, sheish lach v'shinot atzliach. But if not, so you shouldn't do those kinds of things, because there is a concern that you're not going to be matzliach. So what does that mean? It means you should get divorced? What's it exactly referring to? It's saying you shouldn't do that anymore. You should then sell the house? I mean, it's easier to accept with selling the house. But it's not so easy to accept with after a wedding is over, after you had a baby. Right? What exactly do you do with the baby at that point?
What's it have to do with feet anywhere?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say I didn't get married and I went into business and I failed. So that's
no, but the Gemara is saying that there's a connection.
Right,
so there's a connection. It's hard to understand what the nafkamina will be.
Right.
Okay, but that is a comment that the Gemara makes. So the Rama says, yeah, based on the next line of the Gemara, I don't know why the Machaber himself doesn't quote it. Meaning it's three times. It's not just once. It's three times that it happens. And then he says, and this is, I think, the most interesting part of this Ramah. He says, "V'chein muter lomer l'tinok psok li psukecha," and it also is permissible to ask a tinok, "Tell me what pasuk you're learning." Now we see this in the Gemara several times that someone goes and asks a kid, "What pasuk do you learn in yeshiva today?" And people have a reaction based on whatever pasuk that is. So this is the source for the idea of a Goral Hagra. Bob, did the Gra actually? I looked around and stuff. I'm not sure what the Gra had to do with the Goral Hagra. And it is pointed out that it existed before the Gra was alive as well. So I'm not sure what he did or added, etc. But this is quoted as the source for that.
A lot of times people asking this question are not even Jews.
What do you mean?
In the Gemara. For example, it says that Nero and Kesar came.
Right. Right, but it also has with Tanoim doing it as well. So the Shach says, Mashma das harav poskim, Shach ei, dafil lasos maisav alismachlav, even to do something and act based upon it, lasar al pasuk, based on the pasuk, you come across mutter dechashiv ksas nevuah. That's considered a little bit of a nevuah. Oh, and then the Ramah here says, Simon Dara, as we see with regards to Eliezer, and we see with Yonasan, and some say that it's asrik to do, vaholich betom uvuteach b'ashem, chasid yisuv v'venu. But you should try to be simple. But there is this idea of doing a Goral Hagra. So I'll just say right, so there's three Goral Hagra stories. Two of them are famous, and one of them, Reisman mentioned, happened to him personally, which is like pretty cool. So the famous one, which I think might be somewhat has been claimed to be apocryphal, is the famous story when Rav Aaron Cutler was trying to figure out whether to come to America or whether to go to Israel. So the story goes that he did a Goral Hagra, and it says, go the pasuk in Shmos who says, go Aaron, greet your brother Moshe in the desert. Meaning Rav Moshe Feinstein is in America already, and that was an indication that he should go to America rather than go to Israel. So that is quoted in Hanuch Teller posted in his biography, and Hanuch Teller says himself, I believe he himself says it might be apocryphal. So if Hanuch Teller in his biography is saying that it might very well be apocryphal, so you know, we gotta wonder a little bit. But the most famous, I think, Goral Hagra is Rav Aryeh Levine in you know the story with the 35, the Lamed Hay, the 35 were people that were killed trying to during the 48th war, trying to resupply the Gush Emunim. There is a story there that they met a shepherd, and the question was, the shepherd who met them, should they kill him so that he won't reveal their whereabouts or not? They ended up letting him live, and the way the story goes is the shepherd then alerted the people that these people are there, and they were ambushed, and then they were consequently all killed. That just, I looked at the Wikipedia article today, they claim that that shepherd's story is apocryphal. So whatever, take Wikipedia, that's what they said. So, and it's a question, there's another rumor that it was two women who happened to see them, but whatever it is, they were caught, and they were all killed. It took 3 years for them to go and be able to get the bodies back. In the new biography of Gorin, which was just, it's not new biography, it was just translated into English. So he has all of these, there's a big, big chunk of stories that following the 48th war, Rav Gorin went and got all these bodies from all over the place. He went to the Negev, and he went to the West, what's referred to as the West Bank in Jordanian territory. All these stories of him trying to get all these bodies and getting them for Kibbutz Yisrael. I don't remember if his biography talked about this story, but the problem is they got the 35 back, but they were only able to identify 23 of them. So there are 12 that they couldn't figure out who they were. I mean, they knew who the 35 people were, but they didn't know which one was which. So Rav Aryeh Levine, it says, did a Goral Hagra. He gathered all the families together, and with each of them, there's what you do, instead of opening the psukim and finding the pasuk, and he was able to find a pasuk on each page for each of the boys that matched their names, and he gave them Kfuras Yisrael based on those findings of the Goral Hagra, which is a double chiddush. It's not just that he relied on it to make a decision, he relied on it to actually establish a name for these people. I don't know if any of them were Agunos. That's part of what Rabbi Gorin, in Rabbi Gorin's book, he talks a lot about figuring out for the Aguna issues. But that was story two. Then Rabbi Reisman has his own personal story. He said when he was in Torah Vadas, so they asked him to be the Menahel of the high school. And he very much did not want to be the Menahel of the high school. So he didn't want to do it. So he went to Rav Pam, and Rav Pam said, okay, well, let's do a Goral Hagra. Mm-hmm. He was like, really? Well, yeah, give me a Tanakh. So they got a Tanakh, and he did this Goral Hagra and opened up to a pasuk about Levi going to work for 7 years, and he's a Levi. So Pam said, okay, there you go. Gotta do it. So he said, okay, fine, I did the Goral Hagra, I'll go ahead and do it. And then he said a couple of weeks later, someone else came to town, and happened to they didn't have to do it anymore. So Rav Pam came to him and said, good news, you don't have to do the Menahel position anymore. So Rav Pam said, okay, but the Goral Hagra said I should do the Menahel position. So Rav Pam said, no, the Goral Hagra is only to be used when you're Masupuk, but now there's no Safik anymore. Now there's somebody else to do the position, so therefore you don't have to do the position anymore. So, I don't know, that's the story. These things are out there, they're used, although, I've yet to see it in action. Why are you looking at me like that?
Trying to remember, which I cannot. I believe there's a Rabbi Friend on a Rabbi Friend in old tape where he talks about a Gora Hagra that was not one of these stories that he knew about. Mm-hmm. But somebody who was also
So if it, I'm not sure. I wasn't able to find anywhere that actually describes how to do it. I don't know if it's in the Kisveig or, and I don't exactly know what. I don't really know what it has to do with the Vilna Gaon.
If you open it up and it's not the right, it's not the right pasuk, you just like do it again.
It's not the first. You just don't open up. The
there's a way of going back and forth a few times. You have to use a Tanakh that doesn't have any translation and doesn't have any portion, and you just use a psukim and you go back and forth a few times. You open to a page and you find something on that page that happens to match your.
So you had a whole page to work with.
I believe you know.
I think one of the other preparations you have to do also.
That's my impression.
Fasting or something.
Yeah.
I have one story about it.